Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and right now, if you stand on a subway platform on your own, you are somewhat invisible. Nobody notices you in the crowd, maybe. You can't be contacted, as there's no cell phone service. Well, for better or worse, that's about to change, as the MTA installs thousands of video cameras throughout the subway system, as well as bringing cell phone service to every station within the next few years. The agency struck a deal with defense contractor Lockheed Martin in a plan to make the subway better equipped to prevent a terrorist attack. Civil libertarians are wary about the intensive video tracking, and there's some grumbling over the annoyances involved with loud phone conversations. The $200 million plus deal was praised by Republicans and Democrats alike in the official political sector, but how much will this protect against an attack? And how much will it change the subway experience for better or worse? With me now is Sewell Chan, reporter with the New York Times. He's been covering the story for the paper. Hi, Sewell. Welcome to WNYC.
Hello, Brian. It's a pleasure to be with you.
So flesh this out for us a little bit more, first of all, on the facts. What does the new plan entail?
The security plan or the cell phone plan?
The security plan.
Well, the security plan, Brian, is really one of the most ambitious that they've announced, probably the most ambitious they've announced since 9/11. They're going to pay a group of defense contractors and Lockheed Martin, and it has some partner companies, including some transportation companies. But essentially, they wanted to just saturate the subway system with surveillance, using not only conventional closed-circuit TV cameras, but also smart cameras that apparently are hooked up to the software that can detect the difference between, a person who's moving and a package that has been left unattended.
Mm-hmm. That's what's called the intelligent video.
Exactly.
It can pivot, it can rotate, it can zoom in on objects, so it could see something, it would be somehow programmed to see something that's been stationary for a certain amount of time, but that wasn't always there?
Exactly, Brian. In the demonstration they showed, there were many, many people moving about on a bustling subway platform. Each of them was essentially captured, if you will, by sort of a green rectangle that moved along with them. Then when a briefcase was left behind, a red rectangle suddenly appeared. When the briefcase was motionless, stationary for about, 10 seconds or however long they want to program it, an alert automatically goes off. To let the official who's monitoring the security situation know that something unusual has occurred. It's supposed to be far superior than an old system where you simply have a bank of cameras and someone is supposed to stay watch over them. We all know that it's hard to remain attentive in front of a screen where not much changes for a long period of time.
And you wrote about a limitation in this video system that if the same package is left in a garbage can instead of out in the open, it escapes detection. So wouldn't a savvy terrorist learn this pretty quickly and just opt for the trash can?
Well, I think you've identified what might be a key vulnerability.
You've identified what might be a key vulnerability. And, some people may say, don't put that in the newspaper. You just tip them off.
Well, we have asked the MTA about why there are so many trash cans still in the subway system, and they've assured us that there has been a reduction, actually, in the number of trash receptacles. But I think they're hesitant to eliminate them altogether because of the large amounts of trash that we New Yorkers generate.
We certainly do. But they did eliminate garbage cans altogether, I believe, in the London Underground system, haven't they?
They have, and in Washington as well. In Washington, there are trash cans, but only after you actually exit the system in the top part of the station, not near the platforms. I think one key difference, though, here, Brian, is that we have so many concessions here in the New York City subway system. A lot of vendors of newspapers and food. It would be very, very hard to eliminate the trash cans, but also to continue selling so many products underground. I think the trash would accumulate quickly. And as you know, trash that accumulates on the subway tracks can often lead to fires and delays. So they're trying to really balance those concerns.
We can take phone calls from people in our audience on both of these things, the video tracking systems for the subways, cell phone service for subway stations. What do you think? 212-433-WNYC or any questions about them for New York Times correspondent Sewell Chan, 212-433-9692. And there certainly have been concerns expressed by civil libertarians about making video surveillance cameras this ubiquitous through a major transportation system. Was there a privacy policy announced in these details at all?
Brian, that's an excellent question and one that I'm still pursuing. Right now, they're saying that the cameras will be both in public places and also in secure places, such as, you know, places where the public is not supposed to be. For example, you know, in underwater subway tunnels, which are obviously off limits. But it is a very, very interesting idea. You know, what use the video footage from public areas can be used for? Will it exclusively be for counterterrorism purposes? Can it be used for ordinary law enforcement purposes, like to, you know, monitor if someone's been mugged, for example, or if someone's been assaulted in the subway system? I think a lot of those details have still not been hammered out.
And let's talk about the cell phones. There have been concerns about extending cell phone service to the subways in the past, given that some terrorist bombs have been detonated remotely via such phones, for example, in Madrid. Is this still considered a risk?
I think by some, Brian, and it's an excellent question. The sentiment that I've heard so far from both the industry and from the MTA is that if someone wants to, you know, God forbid, detonate a bomb, there's any number of devices that they can use as either a timer or a remote detonator. So if a cell phone is not available to them, you know, they could use a jerry-rigged alarm clock or a walkie-talkie or any number of other gizmos and gadgets. And so they felt that ultimately the opportunity to allow people to communicate with 911, to communicate with their loved ones or what have you in an emergency especially, outweighed or counterbalanced those safety concerns.
The cell phone reception would only be in the stations, not on the trains and the tunnels?
Exactly, Brian. And I think that's quite different from what you see in Washington, where you, and I've done this, you can maintain a conversation, you know, when the train's moving underground, which is kind of remarkable. There's no plan to do that in New York, partly because our system is so much larger than anywhere else's. There's 722 miles of track miles, and it would just be impossible, really, from what I mean, or just cost prohibitive to really try to wire all the different lines, and, you know, how would you prioritize which lines to start with? So the focus right now seems to be on stations, and not even all the stations, but really the 60% of the stations or so that are underground.
That's still 270-something stations.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, though, the limitation in that proposal, maybe we'll find out from our callers otherwise, but will probably dull any debate on the annoyance factor. You know, people often single out the subway as one of the last bastions of freedom from cell phone chatter. And I guess if it's only on the platforms and not on the loud, crowded trains, then probably people won't object too much.
Well, I mean, that remains to be seen, Brian. I think you're quite right. The subway platforms themselves are, you know, they're not a refuge from crowds and heat and humidity and sweat and all those other unpleasant things that we associate, especially with long, hot summer days. But they are a refuge, really, from annoying, loud conversations. And I think increasingly, you know, people do want some sort of freedom from inconsiderate cell phone users. So it'll be interesting to see how a cell phone etiquette for underground develops, if you will. I think also the data element is very interesting, Brian. You know, we're such a wired city, but you know, the idea of like creating a Bryant Park-like Wi-Fi zone in underground subway stations, you know, we don't know whether it'll be free or not, of course, but it's certainly intriguing, the idea of people sitting there waiting for a subway while they're checking or reading the email or surfing the internet. They will still not know exactly when the train is coming, but at least they'll be able to use their time productively, perhaps.
And here calling in to disprove my hypothesis about not many objections to cell phones just on the platforms instantly is Carpio in Brooklyn. Hi, Carpio.
Hello, Brian. If people need, if there's an emergency, they need to call 911. There's always Verizon payphones on every platform. I don't like this idea of everyone being able to yak nonstop on the cell phone.
So the noise pollution on the platform trumps whatever potential security benefit there would be for you.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, people seem to be just ignoring the fact that you know, the MTA has already thought of having payphones at every platform, and that's, you know, they can be used there to call 911 if there's an emergency. You know, that can take care of any security concerns. We don't need people being able to check email. There doesn't have to be Wi-Fi down there. There doesn't need to be cell phone service.
Aren't there enough people asking you if you have a quarter already?
Well, 911 is free.
Oh, that's true.
You know,
okay,
Kirby.
Thanks a lot. Sewell, go ahead.
Brian, just to make a quick addition, and I'm certainly not taking any side here, but I think the one thing that some writers have pointed out to me is that so many of the payphones are sadly broken, vandalized, or non-functioning. And there have been reports by the Strap Hangers campaign every year, really, about how many payphones are just out of service.
Right. And what actually is the additional security that officials think will be added by allowing cell phones on the subway platforms? I mean, if a train explodes, people can call their loved ones and say goodbye, or, you know, call the police more quickly, or what is it exactly?
Yeah, well, I think that's a very, very good question. I think the arguments that have been made to me, at least, and again, I leave it up to the public to decide whether they are persuasive, is one that passengers in emergency situations, not an explosion where people obviously have to flee or evacuate, but in ordinary situations will have better communication with the outside, so that if there, for example, are massive delays, there will just be a better sense of what's going on underground, and right now there's so little. And the second is, from their perspective, apparently the network will have some employee benefits in terms of allowing employees to communicate with them with each other more quickly. I've literally heard stories about subway motormen and conductors during subway disruptions having to exit the train and use the pay phone to call into the control center because the radios were in a dead spot or the radios weren't quite working properly, which is sad, of course, but it is the reality of a very old system. So presumably employee communications might be enhanced as well.
Let's take another call. Cheryl in Manhattan, you're on WNYC.
Yes, thank you. First, I have a comment on the cell phones, but my biggest beef or comment is that I saw the video that your guest was talking about on the news last night, and it wasn't several people moving about on the platforms. There were less than half a dozen people moving about, and the man with the package was sitting still, and when he got up, it left the briefcase. Yes, I followed the squares, but it also, it concerns me. I don't see how this can work during rush hour, say, in South Ferry Terminal or at Times Square. And also, according to the story, not only can it not see inside the trash cans, it can't follow onto the trains themselves, which is actually where, in all the cases of the explosions, where the bombs were. So what good is monitoring the platform? I mean, the bombers are not likely to leave it in the platform. They're likely to take it on the train.
Sewell?
I think those are both excellent, excellent points. And believe me, here at the New York Times, we will be monitoring this very closely, and we are asking the MTA those questions.
And the comment on the cell phone is, if people have cell phones during an emergency, isn't it going to jam the system the same way that happened on September 11th? You know, there'll be so many people trying to call in an emergency situation. And also, if there are a lot of people on the subway with cell phones trying to call during a semi-emergency, that means those of us who are trying to listen to the announcements aren't going to be able to hear the announcements because everybody's going to be chatting on the cell phones.
I think that second point is an excellent one. They're already people already really struggle to listen to the conductor's announcements, which are, of course, very important announcements during emergencies. How will, people chattering away on the cell phone affect our ability to hear? We're asking that question, too. As to your first point, during 9/11, there was a somewhat extraordinary situation. I know that the Department of Homeland Security and other federal agencies, including the FCC, have tried to work on protocols since then that would prioritize government communications so that even if passengers were not able to make calls because of the call volume, at least emergency workers, all of their cell communications would hopefully be working.
There was an announcement on my subway train this morning. It went, have you heard that one? A few times, right? Larry in the Bronx, you're on WNYC.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. Shortly after the 9/11 attack, I was in the subway system, and I noticed that those large dumpsters, either at the front or the end of the platform, where they take the garbage for the whole of the station, those dumpsters were not secured with any kind of lock. So I called the transit system and explain to them that those dumpsters are a perfect place for a terrorist to place a bomb. Here we are 4 years later, they have not lifted a finger to do anything to secure these dumpsters.
Well, actually, Sewell, did you say earlier that they had removed a number of trash cans? I don't know if that's exactly the kind
of
dumpster.
No, but Brian, I think the caller, if I'm not mistaken, I think the gentleman is referring to the trash trains, which are actually run late at night. Sir, is that what you're referring to? Is the caller still there?
Yeah, no.
He's talking about those moving trash trains, I think. They put, I mean, for, you know, they use...
Right, the work trains.
These are work trains that run late at night, typically, and they dump bags into these dumpsters. I'm going to look into that, actually.
Okay. Lockheed Martin got this contract, and they're known more for work building fighter jets and rocket launchers and things like that than working on city subways. How did they get the contract for this?
Well, they won. There were three teams that were ultimately deemed to be technically qualified and that were allowed to enter the competition. And they beat two other teams. The two other teams were led, one by a defense contractor and one by a German engineering firm. And I'm still trying to look into those details. But it seems to me that the MTA found that the Lockheed plan just was the most complete. It is very intriguing to me how the defense industries and these contractors have, you know, reconfigured themselves. And, you know, tried to really diversify, especially with the end of the Cold War. And a lot of them have moved very aggressively into this field of homeland security, which is only a few years old.
Is there any criticism about hiring a company with little experience working on transit systems?
I think some of that's beginning to emerge, Brian.
Let's get one more in here. Let's see. How about Tom in Jersey City, who supports cell phones in the subways, right?
Yeah, yes, I do. I think more communication, especially in times of trouble or events, is useful. If I can't get out, if I can't get my cell phone out, but somebody else can, to alert somebody to a problem, I think that's beneficial. My main point, though, is on the surveillance. And this is being touted as the first ever, first in the nation, first in the world. Version 1.0 of any technology is not as beneficial as its proponents make it out to be.
Tom, we're gonna leave it there because we're running out of time. I appreciate your comment. And Sewell, we have about 20 seconds, but this is just the first step in the MTA's plan, right? I understand they're planning to request proposals next for biological and chemical and even nuclear detectors in the underground?
That's what they're experimenting with, but I think the technology, as the caller points out, is in many cases still pretty embryonic.
All right. I think this is your first time on the show, right?
It is, Brian. It's been a real pleasure.
So Sewell Chan 1.0 on the Brian Lehrer Show. Sewell Chan, New York Times correspondent. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Brian.
Nuala McGovern produced this program with Ilya Meritz, Jim Colgan, and Priya George. That's Marta Gustang giving us some additional assistance today with Kevin Bristow at the audio controls. Music provided by Soul Live. I'm Brian Lehrer.